You're listening to another top-rated radio show on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Welcome to the American Hour with your host, Commander Tom Garcia, on the USA Talk Radio Network.
Good afternoon, everybody. This is Commander Tom, and I'm broadcasting live from Sao Paulo, Brazil. Welcome to the American Hour. We've got a great guest on today, but before I introduce him, let me introduce Dick Bierenbach, our good friend. Many of you know him already. He's going to be filling in as co-host today for Paula Lausanne-Ostman, who, as a soccer mom, is attending a soccer game today, so she couldn't be co-hosting with me. But, Dick, thanks for joining us. How are you today?
I'm doing good, Tom. How are you?
Excellent. Yeah, it sounds like you're having some nice weather there. It's about 65 degrees here in Sao Paulo and been cloudy and rainy all day. Yesterday was nice. It was almost like being in Florida. It was 87 degrees, but it changed overnight pretty quickly. So that's okay. I didn't even go outside today. I've just been working on stuff all day. But I look forward to getting back to Florida tomorrow. So quick administrative things, and then we'll get into this to our guest. It's Dr. Jack Cassell. He's waiting in the wings today. He is the doctor who put the sign on his door that if you voted for Obama, please seek a urological care elsewhere. And I think it also said that, well, we'll let him tell us exactly what it said and how long he had that up there. But just a couple quick things here. We're going to be broadcasting live from the Florida Tea Party Convention, which is going to be a statewide convention. I just talked with one of the organizers here a little while ago, and Herman Cain has committed to being there for the presidential debate. They're going to have a Senate debate, and for the seat that Bill Nelson currently holds. We've got to get rid of Bill, Bilbo Baggins Bill, whatever you want to call him, but Bill Nelson, guy is no good for Florida, he's no good for the country. And there's going to be a Senate debate, but then there's also going to be a presidential debate. But if you go to the website, please, I encourage everybody to go to TTPNC, I'll do that phonetically, Tango Tango Papa November Charlie. com, and all the information is there. Get your Tea Party tickets early and get your hotel room. The Hilton is right across the street from the convention center in Daytona Beach, Daytona, Florida. That's where it is. I should have said that. But don't miss that convention. There are going to be a lot of great speakers. Marco Rubio is going to be there speaking. And, of course, we, the American Hour, will have a table there. We'll be broadcasting live a couple hours each day, as well as doing lots of interviews and wandering around. All the Tea Party groups in Florida are going to be represented there, so you don't want to miss out. It's going to be a very cool thing. Then, let's see, to go backwards just slightly, 17th of August, we had Frank Aquila on talking about his book, Sarah Palin Out of Nowhere. 17th August, go back to the archives and check that out in case you missed it. Our good friend Steve Rosenblum with the Conservative Republican Forum, if you go to our website, usaradionetwork.com, there's a link there for him. He's doing his show every day at 2 o'clock. On current events, and then on Saturday, he's got great guests, awesome guests. You don't want to miss that. So go check out his page and check out the stuff that he's working on. Let's see. Just on Monday, Dick, we had John Casey, the president of Space and Science Research Corporation, talking about his book Cold Sun. Very fascinating. The era of Al Gore and global warming is over. Go listen to that show if you missed it. Great stuff that we talked about. So we got into some details about why we're going to hit a cooling period here for maybe as long as 30 years or more, and it's going to be a significant cooling period that you need to be aware of. So we've got all that stuff going on. And then, of course, shout out to Joan Flowers. We're still working on getting her father moved to Arlington. And I spoke with a veterans lawyer today and a veterans service officer. And so we're continuing to that's in the area, actually in the area where Joan lives. And we're continuing to work this issue so that we can see if we can get her World War II hero father moved to Arlington, where he should be, for his final resting place. So those are a lot of things that we've been working on and are going on, and we've got lots of great shows coming up in the future as well. Dick, who's a good guest that we've got coming up here in maybe the next couple weeks that we can kind of throw out there to everybody?
How about a nice attorney on the Constitution, Christine Ann Hall?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
She's going to be
very interesting. Did she get in trouble for going in? Yes, you got in trouble for going and explaining to Tea Party groups about the Constitution.
Yes. Yes, they told her, you're either going to practice law for us or we're going to fire you. And she said, you're not going to take away my rights to speak as I so desire.
Yeah, first of all, it's First Amendment. Second of all, how can anybody be upset with somebody that's teaching the Constitution? And especially when they're teaching it properly. That's the problem. Apparently,
well, if you're not following
liberal.
The Constitution and you're violating the law, maybe it's making them nervous.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. All right. Well, so that's going to be great to have her on the show. Do you know what? Is that next week, Dick?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Awesome. So we'll be doing that now. Just so you know, I'm going to be broadcasting live next week from Maine, and actually going to be in the Brunswick, Maine area, because my parents have a summer town home up there, which, by the way, the hurricane knocked over a tree and went through part of their roof. So they're in the process of getting that fixed. And the roof part that it went into is the room that my wife and I would be staying in. So they're going to get that repaired. But we're going to be there in Maine next week. It's a beautiful, perfect time of the year to be up there, visit with them. But I'll still be broadcasting, and that'll be fun to do that. But so now we've got Dr. Jack Cassell on the line with us. Doctor, thanks for joining us today. How are you?
Great. Thanks, Tom. Dick, appreciate it.
Yeah. Now, I've met you, and I don't know if you remember. I don't know if you remember we met maybe a year and a half ago or so at some
where,
kind of a
where
tea
did we
party meet? Get together, et cetera. I don't remember where it was, but it was somewhere in, you know, Central Florida, and you attended some kind of a group meeting. And I don't know if you were even there to speak. I think you were just there because you wanted to be there. But that was some time ago, so I don't think you'd probably remember me. But I do remember you. But now, the sign you posted on your door, tell us, number one, what the sign actually said, how long you had it up there, what kind of responses you got from it, and why you really posted that on your door to begin with.
Well, I mean, just like everybody else, I was just watching Obamacare getting shoved down our throats. And, you know, I was pretty happy when Scott Brown took Kennedy's seat over in Massachusetts, thinking, okay, now these guys don't have a 60 votes in the Senate, so they're not going to be able to get it through. And then, of course, they circumvented that. And then the thing that threw me totally over the edge was getting David Camp was the leading Republican on the Ways and Means Committee, and he dissected out Obamacare and put a two-page implementation timeline together and just said from one year to the next, starting in 2010, what the impact was going to be. And I'm looking at this thing. First of all, you know, over a 10-year period, they're taking out $500 billion from Medicare. At the same time, all the baby boomers are coming of age, and so there'll be, I don't know, tens of millions more recipients of Medicare necessary. We know at this point that they're going to have to do something in terms of rationing of services. That's the only way this can possibly work. You know, and they're cutting hospice was included in 2012 as being something that they were going to reduce drastically. You know, and this is the body that we've come to learn that is going to be figuring out who are the axe men in this whole thing is this ITAB 15-man board of non-doctors that are going to figure out basically who lives and who dies. So, I mean...
Yeah.
I'm just looking at David Camp's timeline, and I just lost it, you know.
yeah.
It's kind of like, you know, that movie Network where, I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. And I just felt like, you stupid idiots, you know, you voted for this guy, you made this happen, I'm not taking care of you, you can go the other way. And so I put a sign up that said, if you voted for Obama, seek urologic care elsewhere. Your health care changes today, not in 4 years, like it was supposed to, in 2014. That's when they were actually going to start taking care of people and everyone was going to get horrible insurance. So
yeah,
it was up for at least 2 or 3 weeks before somebody took a picture of it and sent it to Alan Grayson. And that's kind of when the film crews came.
Okay. Yeah, good old Alan Grayson. I'm glad we got rid of that loser. Man, what a bozo he is.
He's
I heard that, yeah.
Running again. Did you know that?
Well, he's gonna have a tough time. His track record is pretty bad, and he can't stop running his mouth. He says things that are pretty stupid, and so it's going to be easy to highlight that. But he does have a lot of money, and so he certainly may give Dan Webster a run for his money. But, you know, and Dan Webster, I have to say, is kind of a lukewarm Republican. He's kind of middle of the road.
You know, Tom, but, that there we're getting two more congressional seats in Florida, too, and one of them is supposed to be in Central Florida. So he's kind of eyeballing this new district that's opening up.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he'll move to that, you know. And so it's just, you know, Obamacare, I mean, from start to finish, you know, it has absolutely nothing to do with the betterment of health care. They call it the Affordable Health Care Act. I mean, that's what's it's contained in the actual name of this act. And nothing could be further from the truth. It's not affordable, and it doesn't provide good care to anybody. You know, they were saying, oh, about 15,000 guys were dying every month from lack of health care. Meanwhile, nobody gets new health care for 4 years.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
I mean, it's all bull, the whole thing. It's, you know, 120 new federal agencies, 50,000 new federal employees, of which I think 15,000 are IRS agents or FBI agents to, you know, keep the money coming in. And then it was almost 2,000 new regulations. It's like one regulation per page of this bill.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, it's horrible.
Since we're talking about that, and we were lied to about it, we played this the other day, and it's not a great audio clip, and I won't tell you how I put this together because I did not have some of my cables with me, so I had to do some jury rigging and that kind of thing, and this was when I was in Santiago, Chile, and I haven't updated it. But let's take a look at what the liar-in-chief said to us when this was all being promoted.
If you elect your doctor, you will be able to keep your doctor, period. If you've got health insurance, you like your doctor, you like your plan, you can keep your doctor, you can keep your plan.
No matter what you've heard, if you like your doctor or health care plan, you can keep it. Under the reform we seek, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor.
Isn't that great?
Okay. Now, explain to us why that's an outright lie.
Well, first of all, I'm not exactly sure if you're going to be able to keep your doctor or not, but your doctor basically is going to be so busy. I mean, like for myself, for instance, only 1% of doctors are urologists. You know, there's only 10,000 urologists in the United States, and now they're saying that, you know, basically there's more retiring than there are going in. The government is driving all of the insurance companies out of business. Anything, private insurance companies are not going to be able to compete with a federal entity that can always lose money, and then they just you know, take it from a slush fund. I mean, it's all one big slush fund the government is. So basically, they're going to, whatever the IPAB, that board says, is going to go. And they're going to tell me in a cookbook fashion how to take care of people's bills. If I don't listen, I get fined the first time. And if I don't listen a second time and I don't follow their cookbook, I go to jail. So, I mean, everything is so bastardized. And anything that comes out of Obama's mouth, you have to take it the opposite. I mean, the guy, everything he says is a lie.
Everything. Doctor, can I give you my views and tell me if you think I'm wrong or not?
Sure.
If this Obamacare does take effect, and I'm still crossing my fingers that it's going to get shot out of the water, if he has doctors running this or in charge of it, I think what he's going to have is a bunch of yes men that will say and do whatever the government wants them to, and they're going to quickly forget their oath that they took.
That the AMA gets from the federal government $100 million a year.
Exactly.
That they are bought and sold. And it's all to use a certain coding system that the government's leasing a coding system from them. It's all bull. And only 17% of physicians belong to the AMA. So this is a fake organization. They do not represent the doctors, and they have no intention of putting a doctor on this iPad board, IPAB board. It's just going to be bureaucrats.
The doctors I've talked to, once this got passed, thanks to this lady that was Speaker of the House, at least she thought she was, I've talked to a number of doctors that I go to, and they all have the same comment. If this goes through, I'm going to quit. I can find something else to make money.
Well, it is through. It's law. That's the problem. It's in place.
Well, it's in place, but not in effect at the present moment. Not completely.
Well, it is. It is actually in effect. The implementation timeline is right on. You know that every hospital, because of Obamacare, has to be computerized, and all of the records can be garnished by the federal government at any time. I mean, everything is going. Yeah, not everybody has health care insurance, and the taxation part of it isn't totally in place, but it's in. It's happening.
Well, what I'm wondering is, now they come up with this fantastic number of people that don't have health insurance. I don't know where they got their facts and figures from, but the only people that I am aware of that don't pay for health insurance are on welfare, or maybe they work for a company that has a mom-and-pop business where there's only two or three employees, so they have to go find their own health care. Other than that, the majority of the people in this country are covered by their employer.
Yeah, they estimated that a third of the people that don't have insurance can't afford to buy it, but they choose to buy other things. You know, I mean, there are plenty of young people who are at low risk for the different diseases. They just feel like, hey, I'm going to get a new car. Screw buying insurance. I don't need it. I haven't been sick a day in my life. It's just a whole bastardization of the healthcare system under the ploy of actually giving. You know, it's all about goodness and taking care of people, but nothing could be further from the truth. This is all just a way to take your money and freedom away. And you know, this guy, Judge Vinson, who was the federal judge in Florida, who ruled that that Obamacare, the individual mandate, was unconstitutional. He basically said, you know, that if the government can make you buy insurance, there is no limit to their power. They can make you buy anything. You know, this is the end of freedom if this does not get repealed or deemed unconstitutional. So, I mean, it's kind of incredible that any federal court would say that it is constitutional. Or even in the last one, the appellate court, the 11th court in Atlanta, they deemed it unconstitutional. But it was 2 out of 3. I mean, there was still one of them that somehow thinks that the Commerce Clause can apply to this. I mean, it's amazing.
Well,
it's really scary.
Well, Doctor, in that dissenting judge's statement, he admitted that he and his colleagues have been violating. Now, these are not his words; these are my words, and I'll explain why.
Uh-huh.
He and his colleagues for 200 years have been violating the Constitution, expanding the power of the federal government. What he said was, over the last two centuries, the power given to Congress under the Commerce Clause has expanded. I think he said something like astronomically. I mean, like hugely. Now, the question I would ask, and I've asked the listeners before in the past, how do you expand the power of a branch of government? How do you expand it? And I'll ask you guys, you know, and this is not a trick question or anything like that. How, think of a legal way, a constitutional way, that you could expand the power of one of the branches of the government? The amendment process.
Well,
that's the only way.
Sorry?
But legally, to do it legally, the only way, no branch of the government can expand another branch's, that's not an enumerated power, and no branch can expand its own power, that's not an enumerated power either. So what he admitted the judiciary has done for the last 200 years is they have expanded the power of Congress under the Commerce Clause by reinterpreting it, constantly reinterpreting it, which is, in fact, a violation of the Constitution to expand another branch's power of the government via judicial rulings. So he's admitted in his dissent how this has occurred. The people are the only ones that can expand the power of government, and that's made very clear in the Declaration of Independence, and that's the purpose of the Constitution. And he has admitted that he and his colleagues are so out of touch that they're willing to expand power unconstitutionally, and that's what's been going on. And then so anyways, I've talked about this many times in the past. We won't get bogged down in that. But recently in the news, and I said to my wife, gee, look what they're talking about in the news. Big article came out a couple days ago about how employers are going to be dropping employees like hot potatoes. When the House version was being written of the health care bill, they were going to make the penalty for not covering your employees a percentage of the employee's income. So at the time, I told people, listen, I make enough money that for my company to drop me, they would actually pay more in penalties because of that. Well, guess what the final bill has as a penalty? It's a flat rate of $2,000. Right. Is there any employer in this country that covers their employees for less than $2,000 a year?
I don't think so.
No.
No.
Absolutely not.
No.
No. The cheapest out there is about $4,500 for a single person, up around $9,000 for a family. And I'm pretty sure that my coverage, in addition to what I pay monthly to help cover some of that from my company, is around $14,000. So every company in the country will benefit financially by dropping all of their employees into the government system. So when the president says you get to keep your insurance, he lied because he knew they were rigging the game so that it would be enticing and in some cases financially must be done to drop employees into the government system. And then the other rule that is in this health care bill is once you're dropped into the government system, that's where you will remain for the rest of your life. You can't say, well, I want to go purchase United Healthcare. United Healthcare can't cover you. Now, this is the other unconstitutional part of it. They're telling free market businesses that if I want to buy their services, I can't buy their services. United Healthcare cannot cover me. Yeah, once I'm in the government-run healthcare system, so this has all been rigged to create a single-payer system. And when I talked to you earlier about my friend Dr. James DeJerome, who wrote the book The Cure for the American Healthcare Malady, his family's from Italy, and he spends a lot of time over there on vacation throughout the year. I won't say a lot of time, but time over there. My family on my wife's side is all up in Canada, so I know a little bit about their system up there. And it is not the same. Single payer is a problem. The founder of the single payer system up in Canada, which started in Montreal, wrote an article several years ago saying the title of the article is something the unsustainable or the financial collapse, the coming financial collapse of the Canadian healthcare system. And he said we've got to go back to privatizing a lot of it because this is unsustainable. So there are big problems with it. But we've got a government that this is the problem with liberals. And I've said this many times on the show, they really don't care about the damage they create. They come up with a vision of something they want to achieve, even if it's not sustainable, even if it doesn't work. But once they've latched on to that cause, they don't care what damage they cause. And this bill is going to cause a significant amount of damage to the health of Americans and the economy of America.
Right. Well, the way I see it, there's a difference. There's two kinds of liberals. There's the useful idiots out there that are naive, stupid, or lazy, and then there's the leaders or the ruling class guys, and the ruling class just wants power. They just want power and money, and the way they do that is by taking away our money. They subjugate us, and that's what they're doing. They're controlling our health care, and if they want the next thing is the guns. If they can get the guns, that's they got it made. And they don't want that. They want a lot less people, I think, on Social Security. I mean, they want to lower the life expectancy. It's eugenics.
Yeah. Well, Michael Cutler, who does the show on Fridays for me, and he's actually taken over full time to do his show. We're going to call it, instead of the American Hour, we're going to just call it the Michael Cutler Show from now on. But he has on his website, if you go to his website, and I don't know exactly where on the website it is, but it's on there. It might be a YouTube audio, but at least the transcript of Alan Greenspan testifying to Congress about wages and the economy and other things. And one of the things he said was very interesting, and Michael Cutler's website, by the way, is michaelcutler.net. He does some great articles there. But what he said was that the skilled American worker is out of sync with the rest of the world. In other words, what a skilled worker, me an airline pilot, you a doctor, even you know anybody that you can think of that would be considered a skilled worker. And I think Dick, even you were considered a skilled worker when you were a police officer, but that's another story. I'm just kidding, Dick. but skilled workers are overpaid compared to the rest of the world. And so what he said is we've got to get our skilled workers in line with the rest of the world. So in other words, our skilled workers need to come down to the level of our unskilled workers. That's all about spreading the wealth and taking away power from the people. And this is all part of the plan. But I couldn't believe that he would testify in front of Congress about that and make that kind of a statement, that
That's
skilled
amazing.
Workers in the U.S. make too much money. Wow. That's just disgraceful.
Yeah.
That's just disgraceful. These are the kind of leaders we have. So
it's horrible.
These are the kind of people we have leading us. These elitists that are completely out of touch. And so they're going to create this healthcare system, supposed healthcare system, that I think really is a Trojan horse. It's got nothing to do, as you said earlier, nothing to do with providing better healthcare coverage for us, but it's a way to get your foot in the door to get power. And we had a caller, Sean, called in, and one of his questions was a little off topic about how come none of these judges are going to go after the president for some of the stuff he's done and his legitimacy even as being president, but that's a whole other show. We talked about the Constitution and then what the judges have done to the Constitution over time, and we don't really know where the next ruling is going to be from the judiciary that's going to completely alter our lives. And so if the Supreme Court
right.
rules that Obamacare is constitutional, which you and I know it is not, then we're screwed. And that's how the judiciary has come to control our lives and how politicians have been using the judiciary to their advantage to gain more control in government.
Right. The only good that can come if the Supreme Court rules that it's constitutional, that would ensure the fact that everybody comes out to vote against Obama, so it can be repealed. That would be the only good thing.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. We need an amendment. I got to thinking about this the other day because of what's been going on with the judiciary, and this dates back to the first Supreme Court when the authors of our Constitution were still alive. Now, can you imagine if something came up and you're a Supreme Court justice and even a federal judge, something comes up that's considered to be controversial and might not be constitutional, like, for example, the Louisiana purchase that happened under Jefferson, whether it was constitutional or not, that's a whole 15-minute discussion. But don't you think that if you were Supreme Court justice, you might go, hey, let's call James Madison and Alexander Hamilton and John
yeah.
Jay and Thomas Jefferson in here and ask them, and some of the attendees at the Constitution Convention and say, hey, what did you guys intend by this? No, they didn't. They didn't care at all what they did. And in the history of the United States, written by Henry Adams, great grandson of John Adams, the president, he said that the judiciary had no intention of ruling on constitutional issues as was intended by our founders, but rather as they saw fit. So this was happening from the beginning of time. And so my thought was this. A constitutional amendment that, number one, puts term limits on our federal judges because they can be there for life. We can't get rid of them. Nobody can get rid of them unless they do something that's impeachable, and it's very difficult to prove something like that. It's got to be very blatant. So they're there for as long as they want to be there. But in addition to term limits, and Jefferson even proposed those back, in his day, but it didn't get any traction back then either. But the other part of that amendment, I think, would be that the judiciary cannot rule on any law or constitutionality that would give themselves or another branch or the federal government in general more power or less power than outlined under the Constitution. So in other words,
right.
this judge who said
good.
That the power has grown, the Congress's power has grown under the Commerce Clause, we need an amendment that says you can't do that. You can't grow anybody's power. It's what it is, period. Now, that doesn't mean that we can't have laws and do things and regulation in the future as the time goes on and the times change. But as far as the power that exists in our government, we have a separation of powers, and yet we've got a branch that has been helping one branch of the government grow its power. And we've got to put an end to that. And so I think there's unfortunately, we've seen some we've seen some things happen here in the last several years that I think we're going to need to have some constitutional amendments, and not via a constitutional Congress, because that opens up the whole Constitution for rewriting, but rather the states either propose some amendments, and or lawmakers do, and we move them along, we debate them, and then we put them in place. There's nothing wrong with amending the Constitution, and that's a process that was put in place so that we could change with the times. But reinterpreting it and then using it to give the executive branch or the legislative branch more power is turning out to be very, very dangerous, and the judiciary is pretty much out of control now. So I agree with you, Doctor. How any judge could rule that it's constitutional is way, way beyond me. But that's what's been going on.
I'd also like to see if these federal judges, if they're continually being their rulings are being overturned by an appellate court or the Supreme Court, you've got to keep score on these guys. They're obviously out of touch if their batting average is below. I mean, if they're getting half of their rulings overturned, they got to be looked at a little closer.
Yeah, exactly. It's I'm no lawyer and certainly no judge, but my gosh, just using some common sense, you can look at these things. But they have a way of, you know, when you use the term lawyering up or lawyering your way out of something, that's what they do. They twist and turn and twist to the point where, you know, you've got a president of the United States who was a lawyer saying that he didn't have sex with that woman and, you know, other things. That
I know,
are
it's just amazing.
What's the definition of the word the and, you know, other things like that? They're just ridiculous. Our lawyers take
Let me tell you, my wife is a land use attorney, and I cannot win an argument. I cannot. I'm like a goner. I'm a goner every time I got to
You have my sympathies, doctor.
Well, listen, my wife is not a lawyer, and I can't win any arguments, so you know, that's just the way it is, I think.
But some of the stuff you've just been talking about, Tom, you're getting into my field, being an officer of 28 years, and looking at most state laws, city laws, and federal laws, the way they write them, you can interpret them in different ways. And they do that intentionally so they can do what they want to do.
Right, yeah.
So they can twist the laws.
There are definitely things like that to go on, and there's so much ambiguity in this healthcare bill that it's going to open the door for these bureaucrats to do all kinds of things and go, well, no, I'm just complying with it. Well, wait a minute, no. They couldn't have intended that. It doesn't matter what they intended. You know, some of the other things that are in this bill that are detrimental, there's a lot of increase in cost to the kind of services that veterans are going to need coming back from Iran and Afghanistan as they're injured and hurt, et cetera, that are going to impact veterans. And then the prescription changes that are occurring in that law.
Everything is going south. It's just amazing. You have to actually see this computer system that my hospital had to adopt. It takes me longer to write the post-operative orders than to do the surgery now. I kid you not. It's amazing. They actually have to have trainers at every nurse's station and every dictaphone in the hospital for 2 months just so everybody can learn how to navigate their way through this crap. It's just amazing. And, you know, this is part of the Obamacare thing.
I see in my doctor's office when I go in for a checkup. I am a heart patient doctor, so I go in fairly often for cholesterol checks and just a six-month checkup. In the past, when I went to visit a doctor, we sat down and we talked. We looked at each other face-to-face. When I visit a doctor today, he's sitting at his computer typing, asking me questions, and I'm answering his questions.
Right. That's right.
Because he has to log all this stuff in for Uncle Sam.
Absolutely. Well, it's horrible.
Now here's one of the things that always bothers me is that the government really has such a poor track record at doing complicated things. And we saw an article just a couple days ago where in Seattle $30 million was given to the local government there, or maybe it was the county, I don't remember who, but $30 million to weatherize homes, because then the cost savings of, you know, homes not needing as much energy and electricity and all that kind of stuff. So $30 million, and do you guys know how many homes actually got weatherized with that $30 million?
I can't imagine.
Four.
Like five?
Four, yeah. And 14 people were employed. 14 people were employed full-time for a while there, and those were just the administrators. Those were not the people doing the weatherizing. The administrators then went and contracted it out with local, you know, maintenance-type companies to do it. And so you're thinking, I'm thinking to myself, $30 million? I either need to get in on these boondoggles, but I don't want to do that because I think I'm a patriotic American. But $30 million to weatherize four homes. And then we're seeing more and more articles. Yeah, we're seeing more and more articles about this whole push for green jobs. I talked about how Spain had failed at this a couple years ago. We just keep reinventing the broken wheel. And these green jobs are turning out to be so highly subsidized and expensive that it's a waste of time. We're not saving any energy. Solar panel companies are going out of business. The latest one to go out of business was this what was it? I think it was a solar business
that got
$535 million from the government to subsidize them to try and create green jobs and do this, and they're going out of business. So the government fails at trying to be the economy. The government is not the economy. The government shouldn't be trying to run the economy or even influence the economy. But when it does, it always screws things up. Healthcare is going to be a big part of it.
Yeah, they're all con men. Basically, it's kind of like they get your confidence, everything's good, and then they stick it to you. This whole, you know, Al Gore with his green initiative and cap and trade, he's going to make trillions of dollars with carbon trading if this actually went through. I mean, they're just thieves. It's kind of like, I always liken it to Die Hard, you know. They look like they were terrorists, but all they were thieves. That's what these guys are. Politicians, they're in it for themselves. They're on the inside in these business deals, as we can see with Barney Frank and Chris Todd. You know, I mean, they're all crooks, and they have their jobs going on.
Well, and I would agree with that. There's a lot going on here that's very self-interest and self-promoting, and healthcare is a big part of our economy and people's lives, and this is a great way to get control. You know, the president of the former Czech Republic, what are they called now? I guess they're called the Czech Republic now is what they are. The former Soviet was Czechoslovakia, but the Czech Republic now has been saying for years that climate change is really just the new form of communism. And it's a way to get control. I see the same thing with this Obamacare. It's just another way to get control. So they come at us from some different angles. One's climate, which is we had a guest on our show on Monday. John Casey, who wrote the book Cold Sun. And if what he's saying, and I believe what he's saying, he's done the research to do it. This is not a theory. It started off as a theory, and he did the research that we're in for a cold period coming. And that's just going to blow all this out of the water. But I think the same kind of thing would happen if we couldn't repeal Obamacare and just kind of kept moving along. 5-10 years from now, people are going to look around and go, this really sucks. This is terrible. And then we can say, well, we should have repealed Obamacare. Well, it's too late now. We're stuck with it. And we probably would be at that point. That's the scary thing. We've got to do something about this before its full effect takes. And isn't it interesting how they meter this out so that none of the worst things would take effect until after the 2012 election, so that the American people wouldn't have an opportunity?
The guy doesn't make a move without it checking to see if it's politically expedient. And they're really slick every step of the way. It's horrible, and you know it's just going to be so wonderful if we can take the Senate back and we can get like a fair tax, we can secure our borders, cut out the capital gains for a while. I mean, my God, could you imagine what the stock market would do and people's 401ks if you killed capital gains?
Right. Well, you know, here's an interesting thing. Now, you have a practice, your own practice, and how much would just in your practice, not your investments, but your personal investments, but your practice itself as a small business, how much would cutting the capital gains tax help your small business?
Zero.
Right.
And that's
exactly.
This is what this idiot said last year. I mean, you feel like slapping him. Oh, we're cutting the capital gains tax for small businesses. Well, we don't make capital gains. You know,
right, exactly.
Capital gains are when you sell property, you sell, you know, I mean, everything he does, he obviously is not trying to help small businesses. He's not.
No.
I mean, everything he does is,
yeah.
Or we'll give you tax credits for hiring somebody. Well, you know what? We have to be doing a lot better to hire somebody. It's just, you know, they're,
right.
It's like handing a starving person a fork and no food, you know?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. We'll help you out. We'll give you a fork so you can eat. Well, there's no food. Yeah, you know, the other thing is I went back and I looked at his original proposal for the capital gains cut on small businesses, and what he also proposed, this never makes it in the media, is it wasn't that – so let's say you even had some capital gains that you could realize. You had to invest in something. This was Obama's plan. You as a small business had to invest in something that later on you could sell or achieve a capital gain from via dividends or whatever it might be, but you had to wait 5 years to realize that. In other words, you had to, like, for example, if you bought some property and your business bought, say, the building that you operate out of, you couldn't sell that and pay no capital gains under his plan for 5 years. So how does that help anybody? So it was a total ruse, and that's basically what this entire healthcare bill is. It's a complete ruse. It's not going to help anybody. Everybody's going to get worse coverage. And they talk about the people who – but what about the people that don't have coverage? There are people that don't have coverage, number one, that can't afford it. The people that really, truly don't have coverage and could use it, we would save so much money by just simply purchasing them healthcare coverage and then giving it to them, just hand it to them. Use taxpayer dollars and just buy them. Yeah. And the other thing about – my friend Dr. DeJerome's book that talks about one of the biggest costs to healthcare and reasons healthcare costs have escalated is it's not what the federal government's done, it's not what the insurance company's done, it's what the states have done. All of the mandates that our state legislatures put on the private healthcare and they have the authority and the right to the insurance commission has the authority to regulate insurance within the state of Florida, and the legislature gives them direction on that. We have 44 mandates on our health care here in Florida, which means 44 special interest groups get a cut when it comes to health care. And what I mean by that is, in the old days, if you wanted to go see a chiropractor, you had to write them a check for $50, $80, whatever it costs for that visit. But then the special interest lobbyists got a hold of our legislators and said, you can mandate that United Healthcare that Tom Garcia has for coverage has to cover chiropractic care costs, and he only has to make a copay. Boom.
Right.
Costs go up. Now we have to spread the cost around. So there are all kinds of services that I don't need and will never use and never could use, like gynecology services and things like that. But I have to pay for other people to have those because we're spreading the wealth, and that's what our state legislatures have done to us. If we were to cut those 44 mandates, in other words, I could go in and say, I want a health care plan that doesn't have any of these mandates, my health care in Florida would drop in half. In half.
Yeah.
So the flexibility isn't there because
agree.
Yeah, and the states have done that to us, and people need to wake up to what our state legislatures have been doing to us.
You know where
that's
another
a big
problem
impact
is?
On
what's that?
Hospitals. Why does it cost $10,000 a day to be in a hospital? Have you ever asked yourself that?
Because they have expensive Band-Aids.
Well, you know, you could stay at a Ritz-Carlton for $400 a night, and the bathrobes are nicer.
Yeah, exactly.
So they make it so it's unaffordable. I mean, when I had my tonsils out in 1959, I think the hospital bill was $120, and my parents wrote a check, and that was it. You know, nowadays, you can't afford health care without the help of insurance companies and everything else. The hospital has been, same thing, they have mandates for a quality assurance committee and this committee. It's huge. It's like a monster, and probably only one out of 10 people that work in a hospital actually see a patient.
Yeah.
Let me run a story by you, doctor. You tell me what's going on here, because I don't understand it. I mentioned to you that I'm a heart patient. Recently, I had a small heart problem. went into the hospital. I was in there for 3 days. I do have a cardiologist. He was there taking care of me. He did an angioplasty, looked inside, made sure everything was okay. Came in on the third day and said, how would you like to go home? I said, I would love it. He said, okay, I'm going to release you, but you can't go home until the hospital releases you. They had this lady, she's not a doctor, she claims to be something else in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
She had to come into my room, see me, and officially release me from the hospital. My cardiologist couldn't do it.
The case manager, that's what they call them. Yeah, that's great, isn't it? They have to make sure that all
the... Who in the heck is she? If my doctor
says I can go home...
Pardon?
She's
right.
there to protect the hospital from any kind of liability, and so she
right.
they don't want to let you go until she somebody who's a risk management person trained
mm-hmm.
that way has determined that all the dots, all the I's have been dotted and the T's crossed
mm-hmm.
So that they don't get sued later on.
That's
yeah,
right.
It's all about
that. It's horrible. It's so wrong. You know, healthcare is supposed to be a patient, a doctor, and occasionally a hospital. And it's wrong. Now it's always the insurance companies, and they've made it so cumbersome.
Yeah.
It needs to be simplified again.
Yeah, here's one of the things that does simplify, like a surgical service center, which is essentially an outpatient service center. I think we've got something like 5,000 of them in the U.S. If you combine Europe and Canada, you're talking a few hundred. And what's the advantage?
Uh-huh.
They cost, as you talked about, the cost in a hospital being $10,000 to go and have a procedure done that you know you and your clinic can probably do for a couple thousand dollars. And that's Dr. DeJerome is a what kind of doctor is he? I always forget the name. But anyways, he tells me about the stuff they do in his clinic. But here's what the Obamacare bill did to surgical service centers. It's made it so that it's going to be very hard for them to be profitable. And so the hospitals are buying them up, and the hospitals are just – because what they can do with the surgical service centers is they can add – an extra 20% on to, I believe, Medicare charges that they can't do at the hospital, so they can actually make some money there, whereas the service centers couldn't. So they're being bought up, and docs like you are going, hey, they're offering us pretty good money to buy our clinic, and then we'll just keep working here. We don't necessarily own it anymore. But the other thing that they did that was rather diabolical is they said no new surgical service centers can be built in the U.S. unless they have Medicare approval. Well, you can't get the Medicare approval till the facility's built and it's been sanctioned. So in other words, no more surgical service centers are being built. And DeJerome has some friends that had a building and they were about to put a nice, beautiful clinic, big clinic in there with maybe multiple doctors working there. They just had to walk away from the building because you know they didn't get the Medicare approval prior to the healthcare.
I never heard that. I mean, we started our own surgical center. We've been operational for about a year and a half, but we seriously can do it for about a tenth the cost of the hospital, and the hospital has tried to buy us, but I've not heard that they've basically. I know that hospital, doctor or physician owned hospitals will not be covered under Medicare or under Obamacare. I've heard that one.
Right,
but I didn't hear about surgical centers.
Yeah, physician-owned hospitals, and also I believe surgical service centers, because I saw – now, I may be getting the two mixed up, but I saw an article about a year ago saying that there were something like 75 in the process of being built that basically have to stop building and can't move forward. And that's one of the problems with single-payer healthcare that DeJerome talks about in this book, the lack of these surgery service centers where the costs are so – lower, so much lower than the hospitals. Plus, because they're being run by the doctors, in other words, the decisions are being made by doctors themselves, the error rates are so much lower in a surgery service center than going to a hospital.
Absolutely. And there couldn't be, first of all, just by nature of what a hospital is, it's a collection of germs. It's the dirtiest place on earth. Even no matter how clean it looks, if you want to get sick, stay in the hospital for a long time. It's true. I mean, can you think of this person has this infection and, you know, MRSA's over there. And so surgery centers, by definition, are much cleaner. They're going to have a lower infection rate. Now, the other thing that the government is trying to do is a performance-based reimbursement for doctors. Have you heard about that one?
Yes. Pay for performance.
Yeah, so like if you get infections and you get this, then they can decrease the amount of payment to you, which is totally absurd because you know, you just can't, you can't control if somebody has a bad immune system. I mean, you have to stratify patients according to immunocompromised. I mean, it's just another way for the government to regroup or to take back some of their reimbursement money. They're trying to, they need to get out of the healthcare business, period. That's what the government needs to do.
There's not much.
I know
the
what you're saying, doctor, about the hospitals. I worked at the VA hospital in Minneapolis, Minnesota for a couple of years. And you're walking around looking at helping these different patients and learning what I learned about germs and transmission of germs. I would have, it'd be like going into an operating room and being a doctor. You've got to change the stuff on your feet. You have to, what do you call those things you put on your shoes? Every time you walked into a patient's room, you'd have to cover your shoes so you wouldn't transmit germs to another room. I mean, it's impossible.
It's amazing.
It is.
I saw a lady the other day who said, and I don't remember if she was a nurse, a doctor, or whatever, and it was on one of these medical shows, saying the best thing you can do if you go to visit somebody in the hospital, take a thing of wipes, a disinfectant wipes, and wipe everything down all around them, and wipe. I mean, we're talking anything that could be touched in there. Just wipe the room down and go into the washroom and wipe it down. That's the best thing you can do for a friend of yours that's in the hospital. And leave the wipes with them, and it needs to be done a couple times a day.
The hospitals now have the hand sanitizer at every door, and the rules are this: that before you go in, you have to wash your hands. When you leave, you have to wash your hands, and then you have to wash your hands a second time, even though you haven't touched anybody, before you go into another room. I mean, this is the kind of mandates that we're getting from the hospital.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah, I some of the VA hospitals have gotten a lot better, especially the newer ones that have been built recently. And I went into the Palm Beach VA hospital many years ago, probably around 8 years ago. I was impressed with the facility, but I had a friend, have a friend still, I haven't talked with him in a long time, who was in the Air Force, and he was a pilot in the Air Force, and he went to medical school and then became a doctor. And he's actually now a physician, but he works in a VA hospital. And I was doing some risk management work with the healthcare industry for a while there. And when I first was trying to break into that, I called him and talked to him about some things and some ideas I had and see what he could do to help me out. And he said, you know, if you were – he said, stay away from the VA system, because I was trying to help out the VA system. And he said, if you saw what I see on a daily basis and were a doctor and saw what I see, I can tell you this right now, you don't ever want to be a patient in a VA hospital, ever.
Absolutely.
And it's sad to hear that that's the way it is. I think there have been some strides made, though, in the last 10 years since he told me that. But, that's just typical of,
a government-run organization.
Government-run institution, absolutely.
I was just going to say, it isn't the doctors or the staff, it's the government and underpaying the people so they can't have what they need. They're running it on a bare-bones
It's like a post office with patients.
Yeah. Yeah. Boy, there's a scary thought. Oh man.
Yeah.
That's really bad. Well, listen, Doc, appreciate you spending so much time with us today, and it's great getting to talk with you again
after
all this time. And keep up the good work and informing people and pushing and trying to make sure that the right thing gets done for our country here when it comes to either health care or even just following the Constitution. But we really appreciate your patriotism for being here today. I'll give you the final word, and Dick and I are going to continue on here for a while with some other issues before we call it a day. But thanks for being with us.
Take
and
care,
and
guys.
If people want to find out, do you have a website or Facebook page or anything that you want to tell people about?
Yeah, I have repealsocializedmedicine.com.
Okay. Awesome.
One word.
And then repealsocializedmedicine.com.
Uh-huh.
Awesome. And then where is your practice located in case somebody's out there and is looking for a urologist in the Orlando area? Where could they find
you? Just north of Orlando. There's a little place called Mount Dora.
Uh-huh.
So
excellent.
It's nice. It's kind of like New England. There's all hills and lakes and all.
Yeah,
very
it
nice.
Is.
Come out
nice
and visit.
Area. And if they can find you in the Yellow Pages if they're looking for it and they need a urologist?
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay.
No, not a problem.
All right. Thanks, Doc.
Thank
all
you
right,
for
you
coming
take
on,
care.
Doctor.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Dick. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was good. It's always good to have an expert on, Dick, you know, because I can say these things 100 times, but to have a doctor come on and say these things, like we had, why do I keep forgetting his name? John, on Monday's show.
John Casey.
In any case, John Casey. Having him come on Monday and talk about, you know, with his background with NASA and as an actual scientist and talk about these things, it's great having these experts come on. Always love that. And you've done a good job of lining up some more for us in the future. I'm really looking forward to this constitutional discussion next week because there are some things that I've been thinking about, like that amendment I just brought up. That's the first time I've actually spoken about that, either on the air or with anybody, about an amendment that says the judiciary cannot increase the power or decrease the power via their rulings of another branch of the government. And but they've been doing it for so long, it's just out of control. And that's I've wondered for years, how can we get this under control? Term limits will help, but, you know, I've said this on the show before. I want to go over this because we did talk about it today. When John Adams lost the election to Thomas Jefferson, one of the things he did was create the federal circuit court system in each of the states. And the excuse was, and it was somewhat a legitimate excuse, is the Supreme Court justices, and they're typically older, had to travel, and travel back then was very, very difficult, to the states and meet with the state attorneys and court systems to oversee how they were doing and talk with them, give them some advice, or, you know, maybe weigh in on some rulings and that kind of thing. He positioned these federal judges in each state to be there permanently and oversee the states. And so that was a huge hit on states' rights, number one. But it also was a way for the judiciary to maintain some power for the Federalist Party, because he appointed all Federalists. And so you know how they're going to rule on things that maybe the Republicans wanted, whether it would be state right issues, the Louisiana Purchase, and on and on. They had lost the Senate and the House and the presidency, the Federalists, but this is a way for them to retain power via the judiciary, and they've done a very good job of it over the years and when they've had the kind of power to do those things. And I don't care whether you're a Republican or Democrat, whether you lean right or you lean left, if you're on the Supreme Court, you follow the Constitution as it was written, and you don't expand the powers for anybody via your rulings. There's nothing in the Constitution that says the judiciary has the authority to expand the power of government or any individual via their rulings. It doesn't say that. So, but they're doing it. So,
I don't hear, and Chris Ann Hall will be on Monday's show, and I want to ask her. Everybody's saying, what are we going to do? We got to get these officials elected, and we got to change things around. We have to get out and vote and do this, this, and this. Something I am not hearing, and I don't know why. What about petition? We have the right to put anything on the ballot we want on so that we could change it just by a petition vote. We could force all politicians to serve not more than 2 terms just by petition. We could control their health care by petition. Why aren't we doing it?
Well, that's a good question. That'd be a good question
to ask her.
That's
what I'm going to ask her.
Let's see what... Excellent. Excellent. Well, listen, let's talk about some current events, because there's been a lot of things happening, and I wanted to run through some stuff that's been not so much in the news, but it's out there. And I like this headline. It was written by Terrence Jeffrey in I don't remember which paper. It doesn't matter. If somebody wants to know, it's there. You just go Google Terrence Jeffrey, and here is the title of the article. Will Obama be first post-World War II president to never see any quarter with 4% economic growth? So, and my answer is yes. I sent out a tweet today going, yes, he is. The economy is not going to hit 4% or better of growth before this election, this presidential election. So he's going to be the first president since World War II to not see at least 4% growth in the economy somewhere in his 4-year term. And the reason is, it's all his fault. It's not Bush's fault. It's not this Republican Congress. When the economy was really, you know, spinning out of control and getting worse, what did he do? He followed FDR's lead from the Great Depression and just spent a whole lot of money, which later on his own Treasury Secretary said was a failed policy. So this is a guy who doesn't understand history and wants to follow failed policies. It's his fault. He owns it. But here's one of the paragraphs out of the article that really got my attention, I think it really kind of boils it right down to why this is Obama's fault and will be his fault, and he will be held accountable. Perhaps it is simply because people in other periods would be investing their money, taking risks, building businesses, creating jobs, and making themselves and their neighbors wealthier. People are holding back out of the reasonable fear that under President Obama there could be escalating government taxation, regulation, which would make their hard work and investment not worth the risk. So we just had a great guest on today talking about why investment isn't worth the risk because of the huge unknown of Obamacare and what it's going to do to employers and the economy, and so they're holding back. And that's precisely his fault. He pushed for that when we were going into a recession. Did he push for creating jobs and trying to solve problems with the economy? No. He pushed for a massive bureaucracy, this new mandated healthcare system. And so he is a failure, and he has failed us, and that's why that's why the economic growth will never go above, never even hit 4% while he's president in this term. Then Thomas Sowell, what a great guy. He writes some good articles along these lines. I'm going to kind of stay on this theme just a little bit. One paragraph out of his article, a recent article, and I didn't write the name of the article, so my bad on me. But as usual, as 9% unemployment rates may seem to the current generation of Americans, unemployment rates stayed in double digits for months and years on end during the 1930s. Franklin D. Roosevelt's administration followed policies very similar to those of the Obama administration today. He also got away with it, get this, FDR, politically by blaming his predecessor. That's exactly what he did. He blamed Herbert Hoover, was his predecessor, and it's true. He started the same kind of policies, raising taxes, raising tariffs, and a protectionist kind of isolationist sort of economic push to hurt exports and imports, and it really got the economy going in the wrong direction. And then what did Franklin Roosevelt do? He doubled down on all of that, and that's what this president's done. And that's why our debt by the end of his administration is going to be close to $19 trillion. It's coming, Dick. It is coming. So that was Thomas Sowell talking about that, and then I found this from Steve Huntley. The article is called "The White House Bluster Hides the Truth," and this is important because I have been saying this for some time. We're going to see the kind of lies and deception like never before in this election cycle. But here's what he had to say: the point is that any president has to deal with headwinds to the economy from unexpected and uncontrollable events, domestic and foreign. What's remarkable about this presidency is the never-ending whining about him. And I tweet out frequently tweets about the whiner-in-chief, what he's complaining about today. But that's when I saw that, I'm like, that's true. Have you ever seen somebody in a leadership position complain and point the finger as much as this guy, Dick?
Well, when you everybody tells me how smart this man is, I don't see it. And when you have the intelligence he has and the knowledge of what he's doing, which he doesn't have any knowledge of, he's got to point fingers and blame.
Yeah, exactly. That's what happens when you're incompetent. You have to be a jerk and point the finger at other people, which is hard to get away with in the military. I saw you can't do that, so people didn't do that, but they were jerks about stuff. This guy's really thin-skinned and is always pointing the finger. But here's Steve Huntley continues on with this. He said, "Irene is only the latest of the headwinds White House officials blame for feeble economic growth and persistent high unemployment. There was the earthquake tsunami in Japan, right? The fiscal crisis in Greece, the civil war in Libya, on top of Arab Spring uprisings and other countless Arab countries. And, of course, Republicans refusing to go along with the president in his spending binge, or well, what he calls investments. One advisor to the president even found headwinds from the East Coast earthquake, though the most notable damage appeared to be cracks in the foundation of the Washington Monument." There's always, yes. Yeah, they've always got an excuse. And I've said this on the show before, and I'll say it again today. One of the first phrases I learned when I entered the Naval Academy as a midshipman was a plebe was, "No excuse, sir." If you started making excuses, you literally could have been kicked out of the academy, especially that first year. If you were just a big excuser, Obama never would have lasted at one of the military academies. He would have been booted probably the first summer.
Would not last as a ground pounder in the Army.
Yeah, you can't be doing that stuff. And you can't blame, no matter how bad your predecessor was. Can you imagine this? You were in the Army. I was in the Navy. If a new commanding officer came in and took over, and the first thing he said was, "Look, we got a tough road ahead of us, and we're going to, you know, starts to sound like the rah-rah. And by the way, none of this is my fault because my predecessor did all this. Even if the people in that unit hated the predecessor and were glad that you were the new commanding officer, you don't say that kind of thing, and you would have just told everybody that you're a terrible leader by making that kind of statement. But as Steve Huntley continues on here, he says, Obama and his advisors never flinch from anti-business rhetoric, further undermining investment. They rail about millionaires and billionaires, but their tax proposals would hit small business earning far less than $1 million. So small businesses earning far less than $1 million. In other words, he talks about millionaires and billionaires, but he's going to go after middle-class America, and that's his jobs proposal. You just wait to see the kind of things he talks about, and that they're going to be either useless or they're going to be hitting us in the pocket. Obama, Politico's next article. I missed the last little paragraph of Steve Huntley's. Meanwhile, the administration pursues alternative energy jobs, though the New York Times reported this month that federal and state efforts to stimulate creation of green jobs have largely failed. And that's what I mentioned earlier, that they have to be so highly subsidized that they're not creating jobs. You can just tell people, stay home and I'll pay you 50% of what it costs to subsidize this green crap. Green is really the new red. Red being communism. And so that's my comment on that. But in Politico's Rick Perry dumb? It was a hit piece that Politico came out with. John Nolte said, here's what's coming in 2012, and that's what I mentioned a little bit later. You're going to see stuff that you just – it's just a fact that Obama – I like this paragraph. It's just a fact that Obama cannot win re-election. And furthermore, the media knows this. Obama is a failed president who failed in a way no president before him ever has. For 2 years, he could and did get absolutely every piece of legislation passed he wanted because, what, he had a high supermajority in the Senate and a big majority in the House. So for 2 years, he got everything he wanted. And as a direct result, the Great Recession is looking like it could be the Great Double Dip Recession or worse. He didn't focus on what was important to America and Americans. He focused on what was important to his so-called legacy, and he has destroyed this economy when he had the opportunity to get whatever he wanted done. But what he wanted was not what was best for us. So he continues on. John Nolte says, nope, Obama cannot win re-election. The media, however, can win it for him. And the only way they can do this is to toxify our candidates into something unelectable. And that's what they're going to do. We see what they've done to Sarah Palin and Michelle Bachmann, Donald Trump even. Let's see. I don't want to read the
Are you familiar
here,
with Newsmax.com?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay. They had an article on yesterday. I was just looking for it now and it's gone. I can't find it. My prediction is coming true. They're already talking about Hillary running for president.
Well, that would be good for getting rid of him, but then she'll have a good chance. She'll have a much better chance than him as the nominee. I hate to say it. So I would rather her not get in it, quite honestly, because she doesn't really have a record like he does now. But in this article, they talk about what the left-wing media is going to do. They're going to try and pick off our candidates using their boilerplate, racist, stupid, crazy narratives. And that's what we see them do every day. Somebody's either a racist or they're stupid or they're crazy. And that's they just keep using that boilerplate approach, you know, constantly. And let's see. You said that you didn't think this – president's very smart. I like what he put in this article, Mr. Nolte. He said, this isn't bias on the media's part, and it's not elitist. He's being very sarcastic in here. It's quite funny. And it's not elitist beltway bubble thinking. This is a bitterly partisan war being waged by a media disguising themselves as objective. They are our real enemies in 2012, not the smart man currently occupying the House, the White House, who brilliantly destroyed any hope we had for an economic recovery and is ingeniously addicted to a teleprompter as he wisely goes on vacation every 10 minutes. Sound like our incompetent in chief? Yeah.
Well,
that's what
I said. They also claim he's a great orator. I am a great orator because I can read fantastic. I get a book and I can read to my grandchildren and I sound fantastic. But you take that book away and I'm not an orator. You take away his little teleprompter, he's not an orator. He stumbles and staggers and fumbles everything.
Yeah, he's pretty bad. An orator is somebody that doesn't use a teleprompter and doesn't read. He's a reader. He's a good reader.
That's exactly what he is.
So there's one other article that has really nothing to do with politics, but got my ire up a little bit. And everybody knows that I've been a pilot for a long, long time. And the article is, Are Airline Pilots Forgetting How to Fly? And there's a lot of misinformation in here. They're basically saying that the automation is causing pilots to not have the opportunity to really hand fly the airplane. And they say the pilots really only fly for like 3 minutes of the whole flight. Well, I'm here to tell you today that's a lie. When I took out of Miami 2 days ago, I flew for about 15 minutes. And why did I fly? Because there was a lot of weather. We were in the weather. We were dodging stuff. And when I say dodging, I mean we were doing some turning and maneuvering. And I didn't feel comfortable just having the autopilot on, which I could have put on at 400 feet. So I hand flew the airplane to make sure that it stayed as stable as possible. And with the autopilot on, you don't always get some of the clues. You know, you feel a little turbulence, but you don't get some of the clues that you'll get in immediate feedback when your hands and feet are on the controls. So there was 15 minutes of flying. And then when we came in and landed in Sao Paulo, it was a beautiful day, unlike last week when I landed, and it was weather like we've got today. It's true. I had the autopilot on most of the way down because you've got terrain, not bad terrain here, but there are places I go that has a lot of bad terrain. It gives me the opportunity to monitor the a lot of things that are going on. We've got controllers that have thick accents. We've got two other pilots in the cockpit that are doing other duties and all of a sudden ask a question. And then I'm requesting things to be done, you know, whether flaps coming down, set a different altitude. And so it allows me to multitask. So when an article says that, true, I spend less time hand flying than I would when I was in the Navy, but the purpose of hiring military aviators is they've hand flown a long time, and that's all they did. I had no autopilot for 15 years flying military jets, always hand flying. I've got the skills like riding a bicycle that they can get a little rusty, but they're there, and they're there forever, and I don't need to use them the way I did when I was first learning to fly all the time. Sure. So, but I can multitask now in a very effective, efficient way that is very smooth for the passengers and very, very safe. So it's really kind of like saying, Dick, that if you have a flat panel TV in your house and you got Wi-Fi and you got an iPhone and then a computer, that you're addicted to automation and you're losing the ability to think for yourself, which is absolutely not true. I think all of these inventions get us thinking and using, and look at what kids do with all these different apps on their iPhone and different programs that they utilize to optimize their life, and that some of us old people can't quite comprehend this stuff, but yet they're multitasking on and on. They're using their brains at probably a much higher rate than we did when we were their age. And so I think it's all beneficial, but the article was rather misleading. So if you see it, it just came out on the AP, and it was on this particular website. But if you see that, there's a lot of misinformation. There's some accurate information, but overall, I would say that it's not true that these are causing problems. And here's the thing. All of the accidents that they cited in this, and before I even read the article, I knew what it was going to be. They're all going to be foreign carriers. You know, the Air France incident that we had, they coming out of Brazil, and basically they left the autopilot on and just watched it. And then when they tried hand flying it, they didn't believe what. So it was bad piloting, very, very bad piloting. You're not going to see. And then the other, I knew they were going to use this other one, was a commuter flight, remember, that crashed. And it really was bad piloting as well there. When it comes to the major carriers, like United, Delta, American, Continentals with United now, Northwest, and US Air, and all these. You got pilots that are unbelievably skilled. We saw a guy land on the Hudson River. There's a guy with military years of experience and lots of years at the airline. So really the problem is not that the airlines have too much automation, but the process to get to be an airline pilot, there's where the real problem is. And the training programs and the quality of people and who they hire in foreign countries is a problem. But in the U.S., it's not. So every time they cited an accident, you know, it was Air India, it was Air France, it was, on and on, different foreign countries that do not have the same level of skill and pilot force that we have in the U.S. So anyways, I wanted to put that out there. You know, being a pilot, I just had to.
Along that same line, Tom, we had a meeting last night, a 912 meeting, in Holly Hill. And I was talking to one of the people at the meeting, and his concern was China has some of the planes that we've got, and if we were to go to war with them, we're going to be in trouble. And I said, you know, honestly, I don't. Pardon?
You're saying, are we talking military airplanes? Saying military airplanes that we have?
Yeah.
No, they don't. They got their own. They try copying us with stuff.
Right.
Their airplanes are nothing like it's like with the Soviets. Their airplanes were either real heavy.
Well, my comment to him was, I don't really care what they have got. You can have the best guns in the world. You can have the best planes in the world. If you don't know how to use them, they are useless. If you don't have the
training.
Their
pilots are crappy. They got some of the crappiest pilots in the world. There are cultures, there are cultural things that affect a person's ability to do certain jobs. And I've seen certain cultures do very, very poorly when they're allies of ours. And we do some training here in the U.S. for their military pilots. Their own cultural biases make them crappy pilots. And Chinese have a certain culture, and I'm not going to get into it, and I'm not being a racist here or anything like that. I'm just stating a fact. As a pilot, a career pilot, and knowing the kind of training courses and what they utilize over there for their airline pilots, I can tell you the same thing's going on with their military pilots, and that is they're very, very memorization, rote, you know, you follow a procedure versus think it out. We always have procedures that you follow in a certain case, but they're very, how do I call it?
There's a time to
almost
put the
robotic.
Book away and think.
Yeah, right? they're not able to think and they don't get, their military pilots don't get a lot of flight time, so I guarantee you they're not going to do very well in that regard. But if we go to war with China, we're not going to be worrying about dogfighting and shooting missiles at other planes and even dropping bombs. It's going to go way beyond that. So, and this is not something I see happening anytime soon. But in the future, what we've done, where we failed our country, is we've let NASA basically expire. And
yes.
I've said it many times in the past that the battlefield of the future is space. Whoever controls lower Earth's atmosphere, orbiting atmosphere, will control the planet. And where technology is going, it's going to be very easy to do in 10, 15 years. And battle groups and carriers and other things may not, I'm not saying they won't, but may not matter anymore if you can control outer space. And that's going to be very important. And what are we doing? We're out of the space
we're
business.
Letting it go.
So this is a huge national security issue.
President Reagan said that, too. We have to control outer space.
Yeah, we did. I mean, just look at if you look at the history and evolution of warfare from throwing a rock first at your enemy all the way up to where we are today, it's an evolution of going from a rock to weapons to ships and controlling the seas to now it's controlling the air. And the next is controlling space. And you won't need all those other tools.
You could spend the next probably 45 minutes naming everything that you and I and the general public use in our daily lives today that is all right, goes right back to NASA, and we wouldn't have it if it wasn't for NASA using it in outer space.
Right, and that's one of the byproducts of their space exploration as well as national security.
Exactly.
The most important thing is, so we've had some tremendous benefits, but I still consider the national security aspect. Do we know everything that NASA was involved in that was a joint venture or had anything to do with the military? No, we don't, because that stuff was all secret. But it was there. It was going on. I know it was. And you can ask anybody like Winston Scott, who we've had on the show, does that stuff go on? And the answer is, yep, can't tell you anything about it, but it goes on. They are a national security asset. That's like saying, well, we're going to get rid of the Marine Corps because, you know, we don't really need the Marine Corps anymore. It's stupid. It's absolutely stupid. It's an excuse. And NASA's budget is so small. NASA's budget is smaller than the Department of Energy. So you just talked about all these benefits that we get from NASA. What do we get from the Department of Energy? Zip. Zero, nada. Not
we get higher bills.
Thing. Yeah, and yet they have a bigger budget than NASA. That's just disgraceful, and that's not just this administration, but it's been going on a long time. But this administration then just put the final nail in the coffin, and we don't have a space program anymore. And a lot of these folks that are talented are just simply going to leave. What stick around at NASA so I can do what? Read the paper every day. Even if we keep some of these scientists and astronauts employed, there's nothing for them to do. So they're not going to stick around. They're going to go somewhere else to use their skills. So anyway, well, Dick, it's been a great show. Thanks for helping out, filling in for Paula. And we'll see you on Monday. And that'll be a good show.
Looking forward to that. All for nothing.
Yeah. awesome. And tell Ann I said hi. Have a great weekend, and we'll be talking to you again soon. Thanks, everybody, for – and stick on the line since you called in as the host so that it doesn't drop off. Since I'm – I don't tell people this, but since I'm down in Brazil, I just call in like a regular guest. If I'm home, then I manage it like I'm the host, but I have to do it this way. So in any case, we will see – and do we have somebody lined up for Wednesday, by the way?
Wednesday, yes, we do. Let me put my glasses on. It's like to get old, Tom. Don't get old. It's more fun to stay young. Wednesday, Rhonda on the school system and what they're doing to our children.
Awesome. Rhonda, which Rhonda is this?
Okay, I'm going to spell her last name because I don't want to mispronounce it. L-O-C-H-I-A-T-T-O. Locato?
Okay. Yeah, I was thinking it was the other Rhonda. I can't think of her last name.
Rhonda Locato.
In any case, okay, great. Well, thanks again, Dick. Have a great weekend. And,
you too, and have a safe flight home.
I will. Thanks so much. See everybody next week.
Listening to the American Hour with Commander Tom Garcia on the USA Talk Radio Network.